Today I'm joined by the lovely Ray Cairns, who is here to talk about her new novel, Dying to Know, out now. Ray, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
For crime lovers looking for a new original thriller, how would you describe Dying to Know?
Dying to Know, it's a standalone and it's set in Sydney. It opens with budding journalist Geneva Leighton receiving a phone call that changes the entire course of her life. Her terrified sister is on the line, trapped in the boot of a moving car. She has no idea who her abductor is and she's begging Geneva for help. And then the line drops out. Police search for Amber. Geneva's days are filled with caring for her very young niece and nephew. And the days turn into months, which turn into years. When shocking new evidence finally emerges, Jen becomes desperate for answers. But to find them, she's got to take on the political power of her brother-in-law's family, the muscle of a formidable motorcycle gang, and the questionable support of a policeman who betrayed her in the very first month of the investigation. The closer Geneva gets to the truth, the more danger she's in.
What was your motivation or inspiration to write this particular story?
I listened to a young woman talk about the impact of her brother going missing on both her and her family, and how I was struck by how it like completely upended every aspect of her life. And I got to thinking, you know, in missing persons stories, we often focus on the procedure, the search, or the person that's gone missing. And I wanted to look at the impact on the people left behind, essentially. And then I was driving to an event, and I'm a bit of a what-if person. I'm always asking myself what-ifs. And in front of me, there was a Camry. It has the old-style boot. And all of a sudden I was like, what if someone's in that boot? What if they're trying to get out? How would they have got in there? How would they get it? How would they let anyone know they were there? And then I was thinking, well, what if I was in that boot? And that kind of led me to my opening scene. But then I always kind of want to have a depth and colour in the novel. So I also start with a moral question. So my first novel, The Good Mother, the question was, how far would a mother go to protect her child? And in this one, it was, you know, is uncovering the truth always worth the price you and your loved ones might pay? And then I knew that I also wanted to involve motorbikes. I wanted to have my main character, Geneva, ride a motorbike because my husband and I had just, or he just started riding and I ride on the back. And the whole culture we experienced was just so interesting and intriguing to me. I mean, it's a scene that involves people from all walks of life, all ages, everything. But I also knew that there was a history of outlaw MCs, the fighting between them pouring onto the streets of Sydney numerous times in the last 40 years. So like the Milperra Massacre and the airport brawl in Sydney. And it had had those things that had serious consequences for innocent bystanders. So I knew I wanted to weave the motorbike angle in there as well. So I read a heap of biographies on from the police perspective and the gang's perspective. And then I also went and spent time at motorcycle haunts with my husband. He came with me. My husband came with me and cafes and just essentially struck up conversations with anyone that would give me the time of day. So from kind of weekend riders through to those much more serious in the scene. And then I struck gold one day when I got the chance to talk to an ex-rebel biker who was incredibly generous in sharing his thoughts and on all sorts of things like Strikeforce Raptor and the new bikie clubs and why he got into the outlaw scene in the first place and what was so appealing about the fringe lifestyle, as well as like the day-to-day stuff. I didn't go to the party that he invited me to, though. I thought that wasn't such a great idea. But, yeah, it's amazing how generous people were with kind of their views on biking. And then to kind of balance it up, I went and shadowed a police officer out at the PCYC at Cabramatta and got to ask him a ton of questions about working with the youth out there and why he became a police officer and why the PCYC, and that gave me a grounding for my police officer character because I really wanted to put a policeman on page that wasn't, I don't know, the cliche, you know, the brooding policeman or the policeman or whatever. So I wanted to kind of put on the page policeman that I had dealt with when I worked in, so I used to, I ran a refuge for a youth refuge.
Oh, wow.
For a little while. And the police I dealt with there were just hardworking, good people who genuinely wanted to do the best they could in their job. Didn't always get it right, but when do any of us always get it right? So I wanted a policeman that I recognised on the page, in a sense. So that was the character of Jessie.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see how you got this inspiration from real life people and experiences that you had. And with the bikie culture, I think people who are in the mainstream are usually exposed to bikie culture maybe through the news, and normally that's not necessarily painting it in a favourable light. So would you say that your experiences help you provide a more nuanced perspective and thus create your characters maybe a little bit more relatable?
Yeah, look, I think that that's a goal of mine with writing. It certainly was in Good Mother, and I was dealing with characters from the IRA and the UVF, and that also came from, like, I worked in Northern Ireland for a year during the Troubles, taking kids from the IRA. Part of my goal of that book was to try and show that essentially they were mirrors of each other, and that people worldwide have had the same, essentially the same needs. We're all trying to feed our families, have shelter and have security, and kind of judging people on a very shallow level is perhaps not effective. So I suppose that was my thing about wanting more nuanced characters within this as well. I mean, I try to write from the perspectives that each character is like the hero of their own story, so that, and it tends to make them have more depth. And yeah, that's what interests me, diving into these areas that aren't well known and just helping people know that they're real people, you know, with all the same needs and wants that we have, and they might make some decisions that we would never make. Yeah, the people that they love, they love.
And touching on a previous point you made about the impact on people left behind, I guess this kind of leads us to talk about the main character, Geneva, who is really put in this interesting position when her sister is kidnapped, because she has to cope with this sudden loss. How do you think, when the main event happens to Geneva, she dealt with this sudden grief or loss? Were there any coping mechanisms she may have used? And do you think these have changed as new information about her sisters comes to light later in the novel?
Yeah, look, I think that what happened when her sister went missing was she was absolutely filled with guilt and shame, because essentially her sister went to the shops to get nappies. She went missing from the shops when she went to get nappies. And her sister Amber had asked Geneva to go for her, and Geneva had said no because she was too busy. And so she has this belief that she's intrinsically selfish, and that's the reason her sister went missing. If her sister hadn't been there, she wouldn't have been taken. Geneva doesn't believe she would have been taken because she's taller and bigger and not as petite as her sister. So she focused every bit of energy on to looking after her very young niece and nephew, and swallowed a lot of who she was. She gave up her journalism cadetship. She just became an at-home mum in a suburb in Balmoral, where she doesn't fit in at all. And then when the news comes to light about her, you know, various, without spoilers, more information, I think that reinvigorates who she is and empowers her to start investigating as an everyday person, because she doesn't, you know, she's not a police officer and doesn't have those contacts, but gives her the opportunity to grow into herself again. I don't know if that's a real way to put it, but she becomes who she really is at heart.
Yeah, and in some sense, Geneva's kind of 12 years after the kidnapping is the only one really holding the torch to find Amber. Now, her drive, her passion for finding her sister, where did that character traits or her behaviour come from? Were you inspired by particular people, or did you just want to maybe make a character who would be reflective of any person put in a similar position?
Look, I think I was initially inspired by the woman I listened to talking about her brother. She did everything she could to try and help find him, and that really intrigued me. But I think Geneva is intrinsically loyal and loves the people she loves deeply, and she is going to do anything she can to look after her family, even at cost to herself. So, yeah, I think that it was intrinsically in Geneva, but it's the whole novel essentially is at its heart a story about belonging. So belonging in family or belonging, you know, joining a motorcycle gang to try and belong somewhere. And I think that's her process of figuring out where she belongs is also part of the story.
And it's quite beautiful to see her journey over the whole novel as she grapples with where she feels like she belongs.
Thank you.
Now, I know you mentioned previously about certain characters, but what other characters or character relationships with Geneva did you really enjoy writing? I know there's the character of the sergeant, who's quite interesting in relation to Geneva.
I liked there to obviously building tension. To build tension, you've got conflict with each character in a different way. So with Jesse, he is the policeman, and they have a conflict of mistrust. He has done something in the first month of the investigation that she feels she can't forgive. And he is trying to atone for mistakes he's made in the past. So you've got that kind of battle going on there. Hugh was was great fun to write, just because he allowed me to provide Geneva with a contradiction of character. She's so go-getting and assertive and brave and strong everywhere else. But when it comes to Hugh, she allows him to treat her in a way that, I don't know, I was screaming at her half the time when I was writing it. She was powerless, and I really wanted to explore how our behaviour can change if we're in a powerless situation, and particularly in a relationship where there are kids at the centre. And I guess it allowed me to really unpick that power imbalance that would usually be through parents, but she's a surrogate parent. She's the aunt, but she has absolutely no legal recourse for access to the children. So I wanted to really kind of put that on the page and see where it led readers to think about, those power imbalances. And it's very easy to say, oh, why doesn't she just leave? Why doesn't she just tell him to get stuffed, whatever? But if she does that, she will lose the children, and not only that, she'll be leaving them with a man who is absolutely unraveling and who is essentially used to getting what he wants, very privileged and fairly selfish. She doesn't want to leave the kids in that situation.
Yeah, and I think that Geneva's this really epitomises a strong female lead in novels, especially in the crime genre. And with that, leading from what you were talking about, do you think she has certain expectations or harsher expectations on how she deals with her sister, how she treats her newfound situation?
Yeah, I mean, she takes on the care of these children at a point in her life where she's incredibly ambitious in her career, and she isn't even sure she wants family. She's grown up, you know, with parents didn't have a great relationship, and I think that she's trying to figure all that out, but she doesn't. The biggest thing is she feels is shame about how she treated her sister. Her sister essentially mothered her, and then she let her down. That's her viewpoint. I think she's very tough on herself throughout the novel, and I think I see a lot of women around me being very tough on themselves, and I think it's in the media as well. I think, you know, that it was interesting to explore that in the character.
It's very important to bring that to light. Definitely when you're reading about that experience, not only may a lot of women relate to it, but it can be quite confronting as well.
Yes.
Going back to where you talked about your favourite characters, I guess it was really interesting to hear about how you wrote about them. Now with your whole writing process more generally, would you say the characters are what came to you first?
Definitely characters. Look, for me, what actually is the very beginning point is that research. throwing myself into research. Like I said, I read the biographies. I go to the locations, or I try to go to the locations of my novel, or where I think they might be headed. And I read the paper a lot because I want current affairs kind of slip in on the page, and I find that all that stuff swims in my subconscious and comes out on the page. But I write in chronological order. I start at the beginning and I find out the story as I write. And I love that. Like, I just, so exciting to me to learn the story, and it's like it just comes, yeah, it's happening in my head. It's just I don't know what's happening. And obviously I have to smooth it out in the editing process. But, and I think Michael Robotham says something about if the writer doesn't know what's happening next or who did it, neither will the reader.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. I love that. I love the research and I love covering the story. I mean, sometimes I'll go out to my husband and go, "You'll never believe what Geneva did today." and that's it. Yeah, so I definitely, for me, it's the research and the character first.
And I think that's really great to hear, because I feel like as a reader, you're always just trying to find out what happens at the end, and you're kind of left in this state of guessing. But it's kind of interesting to hear that as an author, you're almost in a similar position.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun. It's a little like when you go back and read it first time, you're like, now how have I got that stuff in there that needs to be there? Because you can't, you know, suddenly bait and switch at the end. You've got to have little kernels of information throughout. So sometimes you have to refeed them in or whatever. But it's quite astonishing how much your brain, if you've done the work beforehand, it kind of does some of those things without you realizing.
Yeah, that's so cool. This next question is from Felix Shannon, who is a host of Death on the Reader on 2SER. Yes. And he says that one of Australia's most acclaimed crime novels about siblings at the wrong end of the law is The Rules of Backyard Cricket by Jock Sarong, wherein the protagonist spends most of the book recounting his life with his brother from the boot of a car. More recently, we've also had novels like Jack Heath's Kill Your Brother. So that kind of leads him to question, what is it about siblings that has us picturing them trapped in claustrophobic spaces?
maybe sometimes we just want to be able to put them there. I don't know. The sibling relationship is such an interesting one, because nobody else comes from that perspective in the world. Even being different, you know, first child or second child does change your view on the world, and your experience in a home is very different. But you still have points of reference that are the same, time periods that are the same. So I think that idea of that sibling relationship, there's so many complexities within that, and, you know, whether the other person's a carer, whether you fight all the time, whether you're not close, and there's so much you can explore as a writer with that. So I think that that's why writers go there, because, and it's also a different kind of love than, say, romantic love or love for a child or love for parents.
Obviously, you touched on it before, but your first book was The Good Mother, which is another crime novel. What has attracted you to write crime fiction?
For me, it's about putting, my main characters are ordinary people. So I get the opportunity to put ordinary people in extraordinary situations and really, I guess, test their mettle. I write because I'm trying to understand why people do what they do. I'm trying to make sense of the world. And crime is just such a rich place to do that, because you can. You can, you know, put the heat on them as hard as you want, you back them into a corner, all of that. And that's when people, I don't know, the essence of them comes to the fore or something. It gives them a chance to really get tested and find out who they are. And I love that about crime. But I like looking at the impact of crime on ordinary people, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess with crime and crime fiction, because you have so much nuance in the perspectives that you may bring to a certain book, it kind of puts this morally grey, in some sense, atmosphere. Would you agree?
Absolutely love that. I love the morally complex question. The idea that, you know, it can sound simplistic, but when actually you delve in, it becomes much more complex. That really interests me in crime. It's not straightforward. And, you know, you've just got the impact of, you know, pretty awful things, but on a whole heap of different people, even the investigators, you know, there's the impact on them. So it's just so rich for storyline and plot and but also revealing character, which I suppose for me is ultimately what I like.
With crime fiction novels, there's also this huge popularity around crime fiction film and TV shows. Now, this is going to lead me to question, have you ever thought of maybe how a film version or a TV version of your novel would look like? Who would play Geneva?
Oh, I'm no good at this question. I've got to think of an Australian. I've got to think of that. I haven't pictured who it would be. But I write, I'm a very visual person. So when I write, it's very filmic. I see the scene in my head and I come at it from that point of view. So it's a very visual experience for me when I write. So I guess in that sense, I've already pictured the novel as a book, the novel as a movie because it's in my head, it is. And the same with the first one. But yeah, I need to have a really good think about what actors I could get to play the roles. I shall do that.
I guess with visualising as well, do you ever have somewhat of like a soundtrack to certain scenes when you're writing?
So if I get really stuck there's a mood I want in the scene, I will actually put on headphones and play instrumental music that I think matches the scene. Or say in this book, there's a scene where I think I've got, is it like Betty playing? And I had that playing in my headset while I was writing just to get the feel for it. I do use music a lot, actually.
To conclude this wonderful interview, I wanted to ask that, are there any new books that we should listen out for in the near future from you?
I'm writing my next one at the moment. It's another standalone thriller. It's kind of like Jodi Picoult's 19 Minutes meets the movie The Fugitive, but with a female lead.
Ooh, can we maybe hope to see an Easter egg from Geneva or a character from your current novel in the next one? Or
oh, I hadn't thought about that, but maybe I can. That would be really fun to do, actually.
Yeah, it's always refreshing to see a familiar face, I think.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I shall note that down.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been a great chat. I've really loved it.
Now, for those listening, Ray Cann's novel, Dying to Know, is out now, so go ahead and grab it.